Chapter 4. Cultural Identity and Healthcare. Magdalena Stankiewicz, Pomeranian Medical University in Szczecin, Poland. In every situation, we have a valid reason to choose the course of action that, according to reasonable predictions, will bring about the greatest good. Włodzimierz Galewicz. Goodness and Justice in Healthcare. Subchapter 1. Introduction. Equitable and equal access to treatment and employment in medical professions requires an open approach that takes into account both the diverse needs of patients and the challenges faced by healthcare professionals. A key element is ensuring equality of access to employment in professions such as nursing, emergency medical services, and medicine, while simultaneously providing every patient with healthcare that respects their individuality. The foundation of effective and ethical medical practice lies in recognizing the patient as the subject of care, rather than its object, and treating them with full respect for their autonomy and dignity. Healthcare professionals must avoid reinforcing stereotypes, exploiting power dynamics, and objectifying patients, adopting an approach based on openness, empathy, and cultural awareness. In situations of first contact with patients, it is important to adopt a needs and expectation-based approach. Asking questions such as, "How can I most effectively help?" and "What does this specific patient need?" should be the starting point for every medical professional. Intercultural competence and the ability to recognize the unique traits of each patient are essential to overcoming barriers to treatment access, both formal and communicative. Only through this approach can healthcare be provided that respects diversity and supports the effectiveness of therapeutic actions, based on partnership rather than hierarchy in the patient-professional relationship. Medical professionals should be aware of communication barriers and biases that may influence their relationships with patients. Reflecting on one's own limitations and being prepared to overcome them are integral components of effective care. The openness to understand the cultural identity of others is also of particular importance. Differences in customs, views, attitudes towards the body, or religion should not be obstacles but sources of mutual respect and inspiration for building a deeper therapeutic relationship. Adopting this perspective, in which each patient is unique, not only supports the healing process, but also enriches the professional practice of healthcare staff, making it more conscious and valuable. Aims. Through this chapter, students will enhance their attitudes, knowledge, and skills in understanding the importance of equal opportunities for access to healthcare and the practice of medical professions, regardless of origin, social status, culture, religion, or gender identity. Strengthening an approach where the patient is treated as the subject of care with full respect for their autonomy and dignity. Understanding the significance of intercultural competence in eliminating formal and communicative barriers in healthcare. Promoting awareness and reflection on personal biases and their impact on relationships with patients. Highlighting the importance of openness and respect towards patients' diverse customs, beliefs, and values. Understanding the significance of gender identity and the role it plays in an individual's sense of self. Understanding attribution error mechanisms, such as the fundamental attribution error and the false consensus effect, and their impact on the evaluation of patients and colleagues. Understanding the consequences of unconscious assumptions regarding gender identity and psychosexual orientation in professional practice. Understanding the impact of racism and structural violence on individual and community mental health, and recognizing the responsibility of healthcare professionals to address these issues through equitable, culturally competent, and ethically reflective practice. Learning outcomes. By the end of this chapter, readers will be able to define key concepts related to equal opportunities in healthcare and intercultural competence. Understand the impact of personal biases and cognitive error mechanisms on patient perception and decision-making in medical practice. Identify the differences between transgender and cisgender identities and describe the basic healthcare needs of transgender individuals. Analyze attribution errors and their consequences in the patient-doctor relationship and in intercultural communication. Explain how racism and structural violence affect mental health and describe the role of healthcare professionals in responding to these challenges through culturally competent and ethical practice. Principles and values. In the context of ensuring equal access to healthcare services and equal opportunities for employment in medical professions, key elements include fundamental ethical and social principles and values. These form the foundation of a just healthcare system, in which every patient, regardless of social status, origin, cultural identity, or other distinguishing factors, is guaranteed the right to high-quality medical care. At the same time, the system should guarantee fair employment conditions for healthcare professionals and provide opportunities for professional fulfillment without barriers arising from prejudice or discrimination. Values such as equality, justice, respect for patient autonomy, empathy, and professionalism play a crucial role in shaping ethical and effective medical practices, contributing to the improvement of healthcare quality and the building of public trust in the healthcare system. In the context of ensuring equal access to healthcare services and employment opportunities in medical professions, the most important principles and values are equality and justice. Every patient, regardless of their origin, social status, religion, or gender identity, should have equal access to healthcare. Justice in this context involves tailoring medical services to the individual needs of patients, rather than applying universal solutions. Respect for patient autonomy. Patients have the right to make independent decisions regarding their health. The role of healthcare professionals is to provide complete information, offer support, and create space for informed choices regarding treatment. Empathy and cultural sensitivity. Effective healthcare requires the ability to understand and respect cultural diversity, which influences patients' attitudes toward health and treatment. Openness to the needs of individuals from different backgrounds contributes to the elimination of prejudices and improves the quality of therapeutic relationships. Professionalism and medical ethics. Healthcare professionals should adhere to principles of professional ethics, such as care for the patient, confidentiality, honesty, and responsibility for the decisions made. Equality in employment also means removing barriers for those wishing to pursue medical professions, regardless of their background or gender. Absence of prejudices and prevention of discrimination. Awareness of personal biases and the willingness to overcome them are key elements in building a just healthcare system. Any form of discrimination, in access to treatment or in the workplace, should be eliminated through appropriate regulations and practices. Partnership in the healthcare worker-patient relationship. Healthcare should be based on collaboration, not hierarchy. Patients and healthcare professionals should make treatment decisions together, which increases the effectiveness of therapy and improves the psychological comfort of the patient. Accessibility and inclusivity. Every patient, regardless of educational level, language skills, or degree of disability, should have full access to medical services. Language barriers should be eliminated, informational materials should be adapted, and insufficient patient knowledge about different social statuses should be addressed. Self-improvement and education. Healthcare professionals should continuously develop their competencies, both in terms of medical knowledge and communication and intercultural skills. Training on diversity, equal treatment, and ethics should be an integral part of professional development. Adopting these principles in daily medical practice will contribute to the creation of a more just, effective, and patient-sensitive healthcare system. Relevant definitions and terms. To fully understand the concepts of equal access to healthcare and employment in medical professions, it is essential to clearly define several key terms. Equity in healthcare. A principle stating that every individual should have fair access to medical services, regardless of their socioeconomic status, cultural background, gender identity, or other factors. The goal of this principle is to ensure that no group within society is disadvantaged when it comes to access to essential healthcare. Despite numerous initiatives aimed at promoting equal access to healthcare, disparities in its quality remain, particularly among minority groups, low-income individuals, and people with disabilities. These differences stem from systemic biases, financial barriers, and varying health literacy levels. Cultural competence. The ability of healthcare workers to understand, respect, and effectively interact with patients from diverse cultural backgrounds. It involves accepting different beliefs, values, and health practices. Numerous studies show that healthcare professionals who receive training in cultural competence are better able to provide quality care. This leads to higher patient satisfaction, better adherence to medical recommendations, and significantly better health outcomes. Implicit bias. Unconscious attitudes or stereotypes that can influence decisions and interactions in healthcare settings. These biases can shape the behavior of healthcare professionals and impact the quality of care provided to patients. Implicit bias can lead to differences in treatment recommendations, pain management, and diagnostic accuracy. For example, studies have shown that Black patients often receive insufficient pain relief compared to other patients, stemming from incorrect assumptions about their pain tolerance. Patient-centered care, a healthcare model that prioritizes the individual needs, preferences, and values of the patient, enabling them to actively participate in the decision-making process regarding their own treatment. Social determinants of health. Non-medical factors such as income level, education, living conditions, and cultural background, which significantly influence an individual's health and access to medical services. Health disparities. Differences in health outcomes and access to healthcare between different population groups, often resulting from socioeconomic inequalities, systemic discrimination, and geographic barriers. Doctors who care for the sick must understand what a human being is, what life is, and what health is, and how the balance and harmony of these elements sustain them. Leonardo da Vinci. Subchapter 2. The patient as a subject in the healthcare system. In order for healthcare to be effective and equitable, it must take into account the diverse needs arising from patients' traditions, beliefs, values, and cultural practices. In the context of globalization and migration, healthcare professionals increasingly encounter patients from various cultural backgrounds, which requires not only high professional competence but also intercultural skills. Understanding and respecting these differences is crucial for effective communication, building trust, and tailoring treatment methods to the specific needs of patients. Therefore, analyzing the relationship between cultural identity and healthcare is an essential element in improving healthcare systems, promoting a holistic and individualized approach to each patient. Respect for human rights, especially in the context of health, is a fundamental element of modern human rights protection systems. While many international health organizations and legal acts broadly promote these rights, significant challenges remain in their actual implementation. Theories on tolerance for diversity, although often expressed in words, do not always translate into practical actions. The full integration of health with human rights is also problematic, as the catalog of these rights does not clearly specify principles in this area. Despite increasing migration, the number of international exchange programs, and the employment of workers from different countries, the concept of equality and diversity still poses a challenge in healthcare institutions. Human rights, particularly the right to health protection, constitute an inalienable foundation of an individual's membership in the human species. These rights, characterized by universality, inviolability, and equality, are deeply rooted in human dignity. Achieving equality and access to healthcare and fully respecting the uniqueness and dignity of each individual is a key challenge in contemporary medicine and law. Respect for human rights, especially concerning health, is a widely discussed topic in many legal documents and by organizations concerned with health worldwide. While international documents, such as the United Nations Charter, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the Alma-Ata Declaration, clearly emphasize the right of every human being to health, decent living conditions, and comprehensive care, reality often deviates from these ideals. People around the world continue to get lost in bureaucratic complexities and fall victim to systemic neglect. This issue is particularly evident in the context of the right to health, which remains one of the most ambiguous and challenging to implement in practice. Are legal provisions enough to change this? These documents set standards, but the realization of these rights depends on our empathy, engagement, and willingness to provide real assistance. Each of us, as citizens and members of society, can contribute to ensuring that human rights are not just words on paper. Change begins with action, with small steps toward creating a system where everyone feels seen, heard, and supported. the implementation of comprehensive actions based on respect, empathy, and effectiveness is the only way for international regulations to become a reality, not just a promise written in legal texts. Healthcare protection, especially on an international scale, is related to the responsibility of states to create systems that ensure the protection of health for both citizens and foreigners. This includes various actions aimed at realizing human rights in the field of health. States should implement effective mechanisms that maintain an individual's health status quo. However, migrants often face various obstacles in accessing healthcare. The main difficulties are related to communication, cultural, and systemic barriers, which constitute significant challenges for both patients and healthcare professionals. Many healthcare workers struggle with language barriers, which significantly hinders the effective delivery of healthcare services. Studies conducted within this group show that language is the primary obstacle in providing adequate care to patients who speak foreign languages. Subchapter 3: Cultural Identity and Healthcare. Understanding cultural identity is crucial in providing effective healthcare. Cultural identity refers to the values, beliefs, customs, and practices that shape a person's way of life. It influences how individuals perceive health, illness, and medical care. Why is this important in healthcare? It helps build trust and good relationships with patients. It improves communication and reduces the risk of misunderstandings. It increases patient satisfaction and improves treatment outcomes. The study of cultural identity in healthcare involves four key steps that help understand the patient within the context of their cultural background. The process begins with self-reflection, which requires recognizing one's own biases and understanding how our cultural background influences the way we perceive patients. After each interaction with a patient, it is important to reflect on how culture might have impacted the conversation. Next, in order to better understand the patient, open-ended questions should be asked, encouraging them to share their beliefs and perspectives, such as inquiring about family approaches to illness or specific spiritual practices. Equally crucial is learning and observation, which include both nonverbal communication and gaining knowledge about the culture of the community being served. Finally, healthcare must be adapted to the patient's needs by incorporating their cultural practices into the treatment plan and maintaining a flexible approach that respects their beliefs and values. In building relationships, a simple phrase such as, "How can I help?" can be highly beneficial. It carries a strong emotional charge while not being limited to any specific cultural, social, or individual conditions. It has been designed to be understood and applied by any person, regardless of their cultural or social background. This phrase focuses on offering support and assistance in an open manner, irrespective of any differences. It demonstrates respect for the needs of another person, regardless of their context. Rather than assuming someone may need help in a specific way, it provides space for the patient to define their own source of suffering. This is an expression of universal readiness to understand and adapt to different perspectives and situations. Such a formulation supports the idea of equality and respect for diversity. It helps break down barriers and build bridges between different cultures and communities, as it is a question that does not discriminate but takes into account the individual needs of each person. It is a universal invitation to interact, expressing a willingness to collaborate and understand one another, no matter the background of the individual in question. Madeline Leininger, as a nurse and anthropologist, was one of the pioneers in understanding the influence of cultural background on health and healthcare. She developed the theory of transcultural nursing, which emphasized the importance of incorporating the cultural background of patients into the treatment process. Her research in the 1950s focused on how crucial it is to understand cultural aspects in the context of healthcare, particularly concerning children's mental health. Subchapter 4: Cultural Determinants of Health and Disease. Culture plays a significant role in shaping human health, influencing it in various aspects. It is valuable to examine its impact from three perspectives. Culture can act as a pathogenic factor. It can increase the risk of certain diseases, for example, due to specific dietary habits, smoking, or alcohol consumption. A therapeutic factor. It can promote health-enhancing behaviors such as fostering community, social support, or healthy eating habits. A pathoplastic factor. it can significantly influence the perception and expression of symptoms, particularly in the context of mental disorders. For example, depression symptoms may vary across cultures. In Latin America, they are more often manifested as headaches, in the Middle East as cardiovascular issues, and in Asia as a sense of weakness. Culture can influence both the prevalence and the way mental disorders are manifested in various ways. Pathogenicity. Culturally shared beliefs or ideas can directly generate stress, contributing to the development of mental disorders. Pathoselectivity. During stressful situations, individuals may adopt culturally accepted coping responses. Pathoplasticity. Cultural beliefs shape how the symptoms of mental illness are expressed and perceived. Patho-elaborative effects. Culture can intensify certain pathological behaviors, making them more pronounced and persistent. Patho-facilitative effects. Cultural factors may affect how often a disorder occurs or the form in which it appears. Patho-reactivity. Culture influences how society responds to mental illness. This affects both how disorders are labeled and how suffering is experienced and communicated by those affected. Examples of cultural health determinants. Dietary practices. In Hinduism, there is a belief in the sanctity of all living beings, which leads many followers to adopt a vegetarian diet. Avoiding meat consumption, especially beef, stems from respect for life and religious beliefs. In India, cows are particularly revered, and their meat is not consumed due to religious convictions. Alcohol consumption. In Muslim countries where alcohol consumption is prohibited, the risk of alcohol-related diseases is much lower. In contrast, in countries where alcohol consumption is accepted, such as France, the risk of liver cirrhosis is higher. Sexual behaviors. Cultural norms shaping attitudes towards sexual orientation, the age at which marriage occurs, or the use of contraception significantly affect sexual health. In the Roma culture, early marriages of younger girls are common, which can have specific health consequences. Body modifications. Male circumcision, which in some cultures has religious significance, is performed in other regions for reasons not necessarily related to religion, as seen in the United States. Cultural influence on mental health. In the case of paranoid schizophrenia, the content of delusions often reflects cultural context. Individuals who practice Christianity and Islam are more likely to experience religious delusions, people from Asia may have delusions of infidelity, and individuals from Africa often struggle with delusions related to the local community. It is also important to note that certain disorders are found only in specific cultures, such as Koro, an anxiety disorder observed mainly in Southeast Asia, characterized by the belief that the genitals are shrinking. Alternative medicine and cultural beliefs. In many communities, there is a strong belief in traditional medicine, which includes both home remedies and more formalized medical systems, such as Chinese medicine or Ayurveda. The effectiveness of these methods is often dependent on social norms and the personal experiences of patients. Subchapter 5. Challenges in medical practice. The complexity of culture's impact on health presents medical practitioners with a series of challenges, necessitating the consideration of cultural context in diagnosis and therapy. Touch and exposure of the body. In many cultures, physical contact with certain parts of the body, particularly those of the opposite gender, is regarded as unacceptable. This cultural perception may lead to refusal of medical examinations or procedures. Consent for medical procedures. The issue of consent for medical procedures, such as organ transplantation, is often complex. In some communities where such actions are seen as contrary to their religious beliefs, this issue takes on particular significance. This can be relevant for certain ethnic groups, such as the Roma, as well as for followers of Buddhism or Shintoism. Gender identity. Until the 1960s, discussions about gender predominantly focused on masculinity and femininity, which were considered opposite ends of a single continuum. It was believed that a person could be either feminine or masculine, regardless of whether they were a homosexual man or a homosexual woman. The key factor was the subjective sense of one's gender. However, Sandra Bem challenged this traditional viewpoint. She proposed that masculinity and femininity are two distinct dimensions of personality. As a result of this perspective, the concept of androgynous individuals emerged, who could exhibit both masculine and feminine traits simultaneously. BEM's concept focuses on two key assertions regarding the formation of an individual's gender identity. When considering terms such as transsexuality, non-binarity, and androgyny, it is important to take into account the social, clinical, and legal contexts of a given country. Research from centers specializing in transition-related topics provides valuable insights into contemporary trends among youth and the medical consequences associated with gender issues. Transsexuality refers to individuals whose gender identity does not align with the sex assigned at birth. These individuals often opt for corrective surgeries, hormone replacement therapy, or other methods to change their appearance in order to better reflect their gender identity. Transsexual individuals may identify as men or women, irrespective of their biological sex. Non-binary individuals, on the other hand, do not identify strictly as men or women, but instead exist outside the traditional binary gender categories. Non-binarity is often viewed as a continuum, and non-binary individuals may use various pronouns such as they, them, or it. Androgynous individuals combine both masculine and feminine traits in varying proportions and may display characteristics of both genders, as well as experiment with diverse styles of dress and behavior. These individuals avoid rigid gender classification, allowing for greater exploration of their gender identity. It is important to note that these three terms are not mutually exclusive and may overlap. A transsexual person may identify as non-binary or androgynous, just as a non-binary person can also be androgynous or transsexual. According to the most common and widely accepted approach, non-binarity serves as an umbrella term for all gender identities that fall outside the binary gender division. Non-binary individuals are neither men nor women. They often identify as a gender, gender neutral, or gender fluid. This term also includes individuals who identify with more than one gender. Within the LGBTQ+ community, non-binary individuals represent both the T and Q categories. Non-binary individuals are, by definition, transgender. They experience a mismatch between their biological sex and gender identity. Some may also experience gender dysphoria. In 2019, the word non-binary was added to the Collins Dictionary. This does not mean the term is new, but rather reflects growing societal awareness of the diversity of gender identities and expressions. The term genderqueer gained popularity in the mid-1990s. Ricky Ann Wilchins is closely associated with this concept, particularly due to her significant contribution to the publication Genderqueer: Voices Beyond the Sexual Binary. In 1995, Wilchins released the pamphlet In Your Face, in which she first used the term genderqueer. In this publication, the term referred to individuals with complex or undefined gender expressions, which differs from its modern definitions. In Western Europe, the concept of non-binary gender, often referred to as the third gender, is gaining prominence within the emerging gender culture of the last decade. Historically, it has been widespread and documented in Central Africa, the Americas, Asia, and Oceania. In India, Bangladesh, and Pakistan, there exists a social group known as the Hijras. These individuals are assigned male at birth but function outside of the male gender. Most Hijras identify as non-binary, even though their appearance is stereotypically feminine. Indian Hijras represent a simple, widely recognized, an extensively documented example of a third gender that is fully integrated into society. Reading about the Amazons, women who bravely fought in wars, provides a clear image that gender does not determine social roles. In Benin, Africa, individuals assigned female at birth but exhibiting culturally male traits were called Mino, and fought in wars alongside men, without having children or entering into relationships with men. Today, in Benin, women are responsible for tasks requiring strength and precision, such as carrying water, a task forbidden to men. In North America, increasing visibility is being gained by indigenous American individuals who identify as Two-Spirit. The term Two-Spirit was introduced by Mira Laramie in 1990. It derives from the Anishinaabe word Nijmaniduwag, describing individuals with both masculine and feminine traits. One of the most commonly cited meanings refers to a person who possesses both male and female souls. Some tribes recognize as many as four genders, while others have their own gender-specific terms. Exploring the cultural significance of gender, including its naming and sense, reveals fascinating examples such as the pre-colonial Hawaiian society, which was a multi-gender society. In English, non-binary individuals use the singular they instead of the gendered he or she. This approach has been reinforced by the American Psychiatric Association, which also recommends using they in the singular when an individual's gender identity is unknown. Understanding these differences is crucial for effective healthcare. Medical professionals and other healthcare workers should remember that a patient is not just a body to be healed, but also a collection of values, norms, and beliefs that must be respected throughout the treatment process. Only then will healthcare be effective and tailored to the individual needs of the patient. Acknowledging cultural differences not only improves the quality of care, but also enriches the medical profession, highlighting the importance of empathy and respect in the healing process. Subchapter 6: Psychological Mechanisms Affecting the Formation of Multicultural Relationships in the Medical Environment. Awareness of our prejudices. The division between us and them is a phenomenon present in every social group, regardless of origin, hierarchy, or the values it adheres to. Categorizing oneself as we and distinguishing others as they or them is one of the fundamental mechanisms that helps people navigate the world around them. It is likely that the root cause of this phenomenon lies in the need to clearly identify groups that posed a threat or, at the very least, were foreign, thus requiring caution and appropriate protective actions. The awareness of being part of our own creates a strong sense of belonging and security. As social beings, people express this particularly in their relationships with others, often unconsciously emphasizing their belonging to a particular community. Projection biases refer to a phenomenon in which an individual assumes that others think and feel the same way they do. In psychology, this mechanism is referred to as projection and is considered one of the defense mechanisms. Projection involves attributing one's own thoughts, emotions, or traits to other people, often based on the assumption that others share similar beliefs or feelings. This is a way in which an individual transfers their internal experiences onto external people or situations, assuming their perception and understanding of the world align with their own. In reality, however, each person is unique, with distinct thinking and perceptual processes, which means that others' perceptions of reality and emotions may differ from our own. Therefore, recognizing each individual's right to their own perspective and interpretation of the world is a fundamental aspect of their autonomy and dignity. Another term that may be related to this phenomenon is false consensus. This is a cognitive bias in which one assumes that the majority of people think, feel, and act in the same way they do, particularly in situations where their own beliefs or behaviors are not widely shared. Both of these mechanisms can lead to misunderstandings as they fail to account for individual differences in thinking, feeling, and perceiving reality. An empathetic approach to a situation, particularly in understanding the context of another person's functioning, especially in relation to a patient, helps us better understand their point of view and perspective. People often make attribution errors when attempting to understand others' behaviors, not fully appreciating the significance of situational factors. Instead, they focus on internal traits or predispositions of individuals, even though external factors could fully explain the observed behavior. This type of error is known as the correspondence error, or fundamental attribution error. It is more prevalent in Western cultures, such as those in Europe or the United States, than in countries in the Far East, which is linked to differences in socialization processes and perceptions of social situations. Another interesting phenomenon related to attributional errors is attributional egotism. This manifests as attributing one's successes to internal traits, while attributing failures to external factors. This way of thinking strengthens our sense of responsibility for our successes while minimizing our responsibility for failures, acting as a defense for ourself and boosting our self-esteem. The last century has provided substantial evidence supporting the claims of social psychologists regarding the profound, if not total, impact of situations on human actions. The Second World War, with its horrific consequences in the form of concentration camps and mass extermination, shocked our previous understanding of human nature. The ongoing war in Ukraine, with its unfolding horrors and countless cases of brutality and cruelty, has become a key reference point in studies on how situations shape individual behaviors. In this context, it is important to revisit the well-known, though controversial, experiment that contributed significantly to our understanding of human nature, the Stanford Prison Experiment by Philip Zimbardo. Zimbardo's research was one attempt to explain the phenomenon of new evil. The conclusions drawn from the experiment clearly suggested that the situations created by the prevailing system are the source of evil and the transformation of good people into depraved and cruel beings. The Stanford Prison Experiment aimed to understand how quickly ordinary people could be transformed into individuals exercising power or falling victim to it due to specific social conditions. The participants were students who underwent personality and intelligence tests to eliminate factors that could distort the experiment's results. The selection criteria focused on factors like similar education, age, social status, and a lack of criminal background or psychological disorders. 24 students were randomly selected to participate in the experiment, where they were divided into two groups, prisoners and guards. They were given special clothing to accentuate the differences between the two groups. Prisoners wore identical shirts with embroidered numbers, while guards wore uniforms resembling soldiers' attire, with specific attributes like batons and glasses. Those assigned the role of guards were instructed on the nature of their roles. Their task was to monitor the prisoners as effectively as possible, using appropriate means. The only condition was an absolute prohibition of physical violence. The experiment was designed to last for 2 weeks, but due to the dramatic course and the intensity with which the expected effects emerged, as well as concerns for the students' psychological and physical health, it was stopped after 1 week. The first student prisoner was released after only 36 hours due to clear signs of mental breakdown. Zimbardo concluded that the changes and pathological behaviors observed were not a result of the students' personalities, but rather situational factors supported by the system, defined as the conditions and limitations imposed at the start of the experiment. He argued that the system in which individuals function shapes their attitudes and behaviors, and people are merely actors playing predetermined roles. Their behaviors, behavioral scripts, are strictly defined by the situations, and thus by the system. As Zimbardo put it, the system consists of agents and institutions whose ideology, values, and power create situations and dictate roles and expectations for approved behaviors of actors within its spheres of influence. Zimbardo's theory suggests that individuals who occupy specific roles within a given system are not traditionally responsible for their actions. Instead, they conform to the role imposed upon them, and their behavior is a result of the situation in which they find themselves, and the expectations that the system, the environment in which they are placed with assigned roles, imposes upon them. The role of a healthcare provider who intervenes in the area of health and provides medical assistance bestows a unique situational advantage, considered in terms of authority. The patient and their loved ones entrust not only their health, but often their lives into the hands of professionals. This relationship is based on exceptional trust, which carries the responsibility for decisions concerning the most valuable thing, human life. In this context, it is crucial to remember that the patient is not an object of treatment, but a subject, a person with a unique background, culture, faith, gender, and other defining characteristics of their identity. Therefore, it is of fundamental importance to overcome any barriers to access to treatment, from formal obstacles to communication barriers. Effective care requires awareness and openness to patient diversity, which is an indispensable condition for accurately identifying their needs and implementing appropriate therapeutic actions. Without understanding the individual circumstances of the patient, it is difficult to speak of a holistic and effective approach to treatment. Moreover, there is undeniable evidence of the impact of a patient's mental attitude on the treatment and recovery process. A positive attitude can significantly support therapeutic efforts, and cultivating it requires empathy, understanding, and consideration of each patient's unique context. Only through a conscious and open approach can optimal results in healthcare be achieved. Subchapter 7. Racism and Structural Violence as Determinants of Mental Health. The Role of Medical Professionals. The concept of race emerged in Europe in the 18th century with the rise of colonialism and the development of the natural sciences. Initially, it was used to classify animals and later humans. It is one of the most controversial social and scientific constructs in modern history. According to the Oxford Dictionary, race is a system of classifying people into large, distinct populations or groups based on hereditary external characteristics, geographical origin, culture, history, language, ethnicity, and social status. In the early 20th century, the term was often used in a taxonomic sense to emphasize the genetic diversity of human populations defined by phenotype. Racial classification began with Carl Linnaeus, who divided humanity into four groups: Europeans, Africans, Asians, and Americans. Johann F. Blumenbach introduced a different classification: Caucasian, Mongolian, Malay, Ethiopian, and American. Surprisingly, we can still find this classification today. Advances in human genetics have shown that these categories are arbitrary. UNESCO has played an important role in eradicating this scientific and social concept. In its 1950 declaration, it affirmed that races do not exist in biological terms, but are social constructs with no genetic basis. In subsequent declarations, it refuted the scientific basis of racism. Just as in 1978, it reaffirmed the non-existence of biological races and broadened the focus to include socio-historical factors. Differences in achievement among peoples are explained by geographical, historical, political, economic, social, and cultural conditions, not by biological determinants. UNESCO documents, translated into 87 languages, inspired legal instruments such as the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination. Anthropology proposes replacing the term race with population or ethnicity. The goal is to disassociate human diversity with pseudo-biological hierarchies. The UNESCO declarations marked a milestone in this deconstruction. Overcoming racism requires not only scientific evidence but also political will. Racism is a recognized risk factor for both mental and physical health. It affects not only individuals but entire communities through its impact on the micro, meso, and macro levels. Understanding these mechanisms and their consequences is crucial for future healthcare professionals who are expected to provide equitable and culturally competent care. As shown by Schuler, Okak, and Moran, racism takes many forms, from interpersonal prejudice and microaggressions to systemic inequalities in access to employment, education, and healthcare. Experiences of racial discrimination have been documented to increase the risk of depression, anxiety, PTSD, psychotic disorders, and substance misuse. The authors also highlight the neurobiological consequences of chronic stress associated with discrimination, including reduced volume of white and gray brain matter and hyperactivity of the amygdala. Schuler, Okak, et al. Emphasize the need to integrate the topic of racism into professional training and clinical practice in psychiatry. Their report includes recommendations for clinicians and policymakers to address the impact of racism on mental health at every level, from education to research to clinical care. A key aspect is the recognition and prevention of both internalized and institutional racism, as well as the need for critical reflection on social and cultural privilege. Jarvis et al. Propose concrete anti-racist strategies at three levels: micro, self-reflection, recognizing personal bias, developing cultural competence and readiness to talk about racism with patients; meso, reforming educational programs, hiring equity and diversity officers, and restructuring institutions; macro, advocacy, public policy reform, and combating environmental and structural violence. Integrating these perspectives into medical education fosters a mindset of active professionalism consistent with the Empower model, which promotes reflection, justice, and a holistic approach to patient care. Final reflection: Relevance to Cultural Competence and the Empower Model by Małgorzata Szczup. This chapter illustrates that cultural identity is not a peripheral concept in medicine, but rather a foundational element in the delivery of ethical, effective, and person-centered care. By acknowledging the role of cultural values, beliefs, and traditions in shaping patients' experiences and perceptions of health and illness, the chapter aligns closely with the principles of the Empower model, particularly those of multiculturalism, wellness, professionalism, and education resources. The emphasis on treating the patient as a subject rather than an object of care underscores Empower's call for dignity, autonomy, and partnership in the patient-provider relationship. Students and professionals are reminded that the success of therapeutic interventions depends not only on clinical competence, but also on cultural sensitivity, mutual respect, and open communication. This aligns with Empower's commitment to empathy, equity, and human rights as essential components of healthcare practice. The chapter's discussion of implicit bias, attribution errors, and projection mechanisms offers insight into the psychological processes that often go unexamined in clinical encounters. These mechanisms, when left unaddressed, can lead to miscommunication, misdiagnosis, and reduced quality of care. The Empower model encourages professionals to develop self-awareness and reflective practices to recognize and mitigate such biases, supporting more accurate, respectful, and inclusive interactions. Furthermore, the chapter expands on the consequences of systemic racism and structural violence, reinforcing the Empower model's view that equitable healthcare requires not only interpersonal awareness but also institutional change. By recognizing racism as a determinant of mental health, the text calls for action on the micro, meso, and macro levels, exactly the type of multi-tiered engagement Empower promotes. Finally, by integrating insights from transcultural nursing, global human rights frameworks, and social psychology, the chapter demonstrates that healthcare rooted in cultural competence is both morally imperative and practically necessary. This approach prepares students not only to serve diverse populations, but also to become agents of change, advocating for justice, inclusivity, and integrity in healthcare systems. In this way, the chapter provides not only a conceptual foundation, but also a direct pathway for applying the Empower model in clinical education and practice, promoting holistic, just, and human-centered care.